My name is Scott Challoner, and you are listening to the Leaders Council podcast for the people who run the country and the people who keep the country running. Now, as regular listeners of our programme will know very well, part of our mission here at the Leaders Council is to bring you a variety of distinct perspectives on leadership. And to this end, I'm delighted to welcome Teresa Clark, founder and alchemist of the Wellness Revolution, onto today's programme. The Wellness Revolution is a pioneering culture and employee experience company which helps businesses and organisations improve employee engagement to boost well-being and truly unlock potential. Teresa, a very warm welcome to you, and by all means, thank you for joining us on the show. It's a real pleasure having you with us.
Hi, Scott. It's an absolute pleasure to be here. I'm really excited to talk to you today.
And I'm excited to hear from you as well. And I'm sure certainly the listeners share that sentiment, Teresa. And I guess in that short intro there, I've kind of given the succinct version as to what it is the Wellness Revolution does. But perhaps you could sort of expand upon that and just tell us a little bit more about your work in your own words, please.
Yeah, sure. So what we do is we inspire organisations to put wellbeing at the forefront of everything they do, you know, thinking that your people, your highest value asset. And so we deliver workshops, webinars, we do a lot of remote stuff. We do like revolutionary retreats and offsites, conferences, audits. A multifaceted, holistic approach to well-being.
And I guess that working in optimizing mental health and well-being, it's something that you've wanted to do for quite a long time, isn't it? You've worked in mental health for quite a great many years, and that sort of stems from personal experience as well. So would you say that this is something that you have always wanted to do to a degree?
Not always wanted to do. My background's actually in fashion for textiles. That's what I did my degree in, which was very creative. So I always like kind of aspired back in the day to be a designer of some kind. And then through my own life experience, life took a bit of a different turn, and I could never really go back to that kind of field of work after I experienced what I did. I wanted to go into mental health to give something back, but also because I've had my own personal experience, I really understood mental health from such a different perspective.
Absolutely. And I can imagine it really sort of changed your perceptions about mental health, didn't it? And sort of how important it is, sort of having experienced it from sort of that personal struggle, I guess. And I suppose to an extent, I mean, as leaders, I mean, we can always relate to mental health much more when we sort of go through the experience of that ourselves. And I think we almost have a duty not just to kind of prioritize well-being from sort of the perspective of looking after those around us, our employees, but also to lead on well-being by prioritising our own as well as and when we need to, and being able to sort of take that step back as and when necessary.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, we've got to walk our talk, haven't we? And it's incredibly important in organisations as leaders that we're role modelling those behaviours, because, you know, if our culture, or we're trying to build a culture of well-being, yet we can see our leaders aren't, you know, looking after their own well-being, that they're burning out, you know, not sleeping, you know, that's having a knock-on effect in terms of, you know, how people perceive, but also, you know, showing that the importance of well-being is not really being looked at properly. So it's, you know, crucial that we look after our own well-being. And, you know, leaders are even under even more pressure to, you know, more susceptible to burnout, you know, lots of high stress and pressure, which, you know, can manifest in, you know, not just mental health challenges, but also physical health challenges. So it's, you know, it's incredibly important.
Exactly right. And as we talked about, as a leader, you set the example on mental health and well-being, and you also set the expectations as well. So if people see you essentially working all hours and answering emails at 11 p.m, not leaving the office until stupid o'clock at night, for instance, the expectation will be that your employees have to behave in the same way. So I guess that is something that you have to be sort of acutely aware of when you're in a position of that responsibility. And you talked about as well there recognising the importance of well-being in the workplace. From your personal perspective, just how important is safeguarding mental health and well-being in the workplace, and how can we sort of look about doing that?
Well, Scott, if the last 2 years have taught us anything at all, it's that employee well-being is most definitely not a tick box exercise anymore. Mm. It's not just a nice thing to have. You know, it's a crucial element of a happy, high-performing workforce. And as I mentioned before, you know, your people are your highest value asset. And investing in their well-being, but also cultivating that culture of well-being within your organisation should be at the top of the business agenda, especially kind of, you know, moving into 2023 and beyond. So for the leaders out there that are listening and they might not be that convinced and need maybe a bit more evidence, or think that well-being is potentially a bit of a fluffy subject and it doesn't actually impact business that much, I want to give you some sort of stats, actually, because I think, you know, as leaders, we like to hear some stats. We need to be looking at ROI, you know, to really firm those decisions. So the latest health and safety executive summary was actually published a couple of weeks ago. I don't know if you've had time to have a look at it. And this year's report, well, that's published was for 21-22, and reports a staggering 36.8 million working days were lost in the UK due to work-related stress, depression, anxiety. And that's costing the UK economy £56 billion annually. So if that's not a big enough reason, then I don't know what is. But also, you know, there's study after study now, but there was some really interesting research from MIT Sloan Review that revealed nearly 81% of workers face some form of burnout or mental health issue, and that 68% of employees said that their daily work had been interrupted by having these kind of challenges. So, you know, it's very clear, you know, all the research is pointing to it. But another stat is that actually 1 in 6 people, so, you know, the leaders out there listening, 1 in 6 of your employees right now are experiencing a mental health challenge at work. And this can look like, you know, chronic stress, burnout, exhaustion, and the, you know, the physical health issues that manifest along with that: absenteeism, presenteeism, staff turnover, lower productivity, you know, general, you know, disengagement with work. It has, you know, such a far-reaching impact.
It does, absolutely. And as well as, of course, filtering into absenteeism and bringing productivity down, I guess you could also argue the point that if mental health and well-being in the workplace isn't where it should be, it could ultimately lead to a lot of this quiet quitting that we've seen a lot of in the last couple of years as well. And I think it is right to point out that when we hear a lot of noise about the great resignation, I'm not sure, of course, how much you believe in that. One of the main drivers behind it is the fact that, you know, there's the lack of mental health and well-being in the workplace, and they feel that it's not essentially being prioritised.
Definitely. And I was actually going to come on to that point. I don't know if you know this figure. I love figures because I think, you know, we really need to hear data, because data actually drives decisions. Mm. So 85% of the global workforce is actually actively disengaged from work. And that's, you know, productivity levels are falling really short, hence why we've seen this year 2022 has been like the rising, like you say, of the great resignation, and now we're kind of coming into this like quiet quitting movement. You know, Gen Z and millennials aren't the only ones who are looking for more conscious employees. You know, we all are. If COVID's taught us anything, it's that actually we are looking for something more than, you know, the traditional workplace that has offered us before. And, you know, as employers and organizations, it's crucial that now we start to recognize how important it is, you know, not just looking at, you know, well-being as in mental or physical health. It's about fostering positive, compassionate cultures that not only support and enhance well-being, but actually they help people, you know, they lay the foundations for people to reach potential, because actually this is what's going to push business forward in the future. You know, creativity and innovation is you know, one of the founding things of businesses to move forward, particularly in economic downturns. And so if we don't have those foundations for people to flourish within our organisations, you know, we're not going to be coming up with new ideas, you know, we're not going to be innovating in the marketplace. We're going to be, you know, dragging ourselves along and you know, just making it through. And I think also we need to recognise, you know, businesses, we can't rely on the government to really change things, I don't think. You know, a business needs to kind of move into, you know, a transitional point of like becoming sort of powerful catalyst for good in society.
And there's
there's been a really good initiative, well, not good, an amazing initiative actually, just started, called the Quantum Healthy Longevity Blueprint, which is a Lancet report just been recently launched. And their sole mission is to tackle like big real world problems within climate and health through business.
Yeah, there's an incredible amount of noise about the importance of mental health in the workplace and just sort of how crucial it is that we do get that right. And I think we're seeing a lot of evidence of that, aren't we, at the moment? And part of that is, of course, due to the reasons that we just talked about, the fact that, of course, it is a driver of the Great Resignation, and it's almost now needed as a risk mitigation strategy, because in a difficult recruitment environment at the moment, retention of your workforce, employee engagement, positive employee engagement is so critical. And for anybody, of course, who may be essentially sort of beating around the bush with well-being, as we've talked about earlier as well, I think it's important to emphasise that there are commercial benefits to this beyond just retention, aren't there? Because it's fair to say there's a correlation between better well-being and increased productivity. And you're not losing so many days to sort of sick leave and absenteeism. More is getting done, and you will see a bottom line benefit, won't you, come the end of all of this?
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's so many benefits. I like to kind of call it returns on happiness, so like the positive impact of well-being cultures and organisations. You've got things like 4x4 increased revenue, 52% attract top talent, 33% higher productivity, that's pretty huge, 87% more engagement, 7x more innovation, 40% higher customer satisfaction, and 21% more profitability. And Deloitte research also found that for every £1 invested in employee wellbeing interventions, employers see an average return of £5.30 in reduced absenteeism, presenteeism, staff turnover. So, you know, there's huge things that, you know, like I say, creativity and innovation goes up. You know, healthy organisations also outperforming their peers in terms of, you know, people wanting to stay, like, you know, much more likely to be identified as great places to work on Glassdoor and exceed their financial targets because people actually want to work there.
Exactly right. And this is it, isn't it? You need to obviously make yourself an attractive employer, because there's evidence out there that certainly amongst sort of the Gen Z types, I mean, they will go and work for maybe slightly less money for a business that is more aligned to essentially their expectations on well-being and sustainability and other factors that are of importance to them. So we've talked about sort of how important it is that sort of we make sure that we cultivate a culture of well-being. But I suppose for business leaders that sort of want to be able to do that, it's important to kind of decode that a bit, isn't it? And talk about what sort of practical steps they can take now to really start to build that culture.
Yeah, because I think it can be a bit of a minefield, you know, where do you start? Like, what do you do? And I think, you know, some organisations really get it right, others, you know, fall a bit short. And that's really because when you're cultivating a wellbeing culture, what you need to sort of first understand are all the factors that contribute to both individual and collective wellbeing in the workplace, and how your organization's culture and working environments are either promoting, supporting, and enhancing these. So, you know, well-being is so much more, like I said, than just physical and mental health. It's really a multi-dimensional pursuit which encompasses all of our psychological needs. If you just look at, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of need, what are those things that we actually need to fulfill our potential? You know, it's psychological safety, it's rewards and recognition, it's financial well-being resources, it's you know, creativity and innovation. It's teamwork, collaboration, feedback. Leadership is huge. You know, there's so many studies that show that, you know, positive leadership has a huge impact, but there's a lot of, you know, negative impacts of leadership that really do impact on well-being. So we really need to be kind of identifying all of those things and kind of breaking it down into pillars. So, you know, looking at employee well-being across sort of emotional, mental, physical and financial, but then structuring it as in looking at our culture. So, you know, what's our diversity and inclusion policy? You know, do our people feel like they belong here? Like, what are our values? Are we living our values? Because I see a lot of this actually in organisations, a misalignment of values. The organisations sort of say these values, but they're not actually living by them. And so that's been kind of really related to moral burnout of employees kind of, you know, going against their own values and you know, sort of being sort of fed, you know, this is what we are, but actually it's not, you know, there's no integrity. And I think that's a crucial factor, you know, psychological safety, which I mentioned before. If you don't feel safe to bring your ideas or to fail, you know, that you're not going to do your best. You're going to kind of be living in fear the whole time of, you know, putting a step out of place, and the effect that actually has on your well-being is huge. And then also, like, looking at job fit and alignment, you know, does your job actually fit you? Have you got those skills? You know, are you kind of living up to your potential within that role? Are you kind of, you know, coming out of your stretch zone so that you're being challenged, not too much but not too little, so that you're kind of in that zone of genius almost in the middle? And then also, I mentioned before about leadership, but people and relationships are crucial factors. You know, what's the communication like? Are you giving impactful feedback? What's teamwork, collaboration? Is your organization siloed? You know, how is kind of like interconnections with teams working? Is it very separated? So they're like crucial things to look at. And then again, about data. So it's really like evaluating, you know, speaking to your people. A lot of things we see again is things being created, but we're actually not speaking to employees. So we're falling short because we don't actually know what the needs are of our people. So we're kind of imagining, you know, oh yes, people need X, Y, Z, but actually the reality is that people generally need very different things than we think they do. I think there's some key questions to ask, which are things like, you know, where do we currently excel in supporting our people, and where are we struggling? Where are we falling short? Like, have we got any knowledge gaps? What are the multi-generational well-being needs of our workforce? You know, Gen Z and millennials compared to baby boomers are going to have different needs, and we need to make sure that we're catering for everybody. And how have you kind of adapted and redesigned systems and practices since, you know, COVID, hybrid, remote? Like, how is that kind of working? Have they been looked at? Have they been addressed? You know, remember that remote and blended office-based cultures are going to have, you know, very different needs and ways of thinking when it comes to, you know, embedding well-being. And for remote cultures, you know, you need to be even more intentional about how you're going to kind of structure those, you know, creating that culture of well-being.
You do, absolutely. You have to think of it and essentially be aware that it's not a one-size-fits-all approach to well-being, is it? You've got to tailor it to the individual and how you look to sort of engage that individual. And that helps foster that psychological safety that's so, so important, because if you are showing that, you know, you value that person as the individual that they are, they'll be more inclined to actually come out and feel psychologically safe to speak out when something is wrong. Because what you don't want to be doing is essentially being in a position where you have to spot the telltale signs that something is wrong and then try to address it, by which point it could be so far down the line and then it's almost too late. What you need to be doing is essentially creating a culture where people feel safe to come and speak out, don't they?
Oh yeah, 100%. And we see that a lot, you know, in terms of, you know, and I'm not knocking mental health first aiders, but from my perspective, I mean, I worked in mental health for 10 years. I actually don't think this is a good solution, because actually what's happening is it's a crisis point. You know, we shouldn't be having to get to that crisis point. We should be designing cultures that are, you know, people can have open and authentic conversations where our leaders are talking about their own mental health and well-being, so that it's, you know, it's normalized. Like we're getting rid of stigma, and we're able to ask for support. I think the big thing is also, you know, when somebody does come to you for support, you know, make sure that you really do handle that well, that you listen to that person, but that you take actions to, you know, making sure that you have got, you know, tangible steps to support that person, because there's nothing worse than coming to somebody and saying, you know, I'm in crisis, I need support. And then, you know, the organisation not following through and helping that. And again, that's something that actually happens quite a lot, because, you know, we might see lots of changes or read about it or on LinkedIn think, oh, you know, the world is changing a lot. But actually, there is still a lot of stigma around mental health. And, you know, we really need to be actively like pushing through that and challenging that when we see it.
We do, absolutely, because there is still that fear, and we see this in organisations like the NHS a lot, don't we, where people are afraid to come clean about the difficulties that they're facing mentally because they are afraid of being treated differently by their peers, and that is something that's still a problem. And even though we want to be able to talk more about it, I guess it's the acceptance as well and removing the stigma, as you say, that's going to be so very important in making sort of psychological safety really work as it should do.
Yeah, 100%. And I think that's why it's so important as leaders that we talk about our own stuff. You know, everybody has mental health. You know, it's not, we all suffer at times. We all, and, you know, we need to kind of look at well-being as a spectrum too, that, you know, some days we have good days, other days we have bad days, and actually that's completely normal. And the more we can discuss that and show our own vulnerability, I think something that we've also really noticed that is very successful is to show vulnerability and have that courage to open up about challenges, but also, you know, talk about how you manage and support yourself. You know, if you have got a condition or, you know, a challenge that you're coming to work and you're succeeding, it's really important that we hear those things. You know, it really sort of, again, normalizes the fact that everybody does struggle at times.
And I think if we're creative in how we look to normalise that and share our vulnerabilities, we're open and honest as leaders, and we're constantly keeping the communication channels with our workers as well, we're able to then build resilience, aren't we? And where there is stress in the workplace, people feel comfortable to open up and talk about it. And that is going to help with sort of employee retention and ultimately future-proofing your business, isn't it? Because you're engaging with your employees. They're essentially, their well-being is on the increase, and you're going to see the benefits of that.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, when you face uncertainty, you know, sharing struggles, challenges, successes, you know, that really does build that resilience. And, you know, being able to reframe situations. You know, we have a team meeting or your quarterly meeting and be like, wow, you know, gosh, we've had a real tough time this quarter. You know, this has been really difficult. This has been really difficult. But, you know, we've got through it in this way, and really reflect, you know, I think human beings, we do really forget that, about looking back on what we've achieved, you know, what we've got through personally, and, you know, reflecting on the challenges, but how we overcame them. And the more we can talk about that, we see different perspectives. And I think that really fosters a resilience within organisations.
And just as you've talked about there, when you're sort of looking at the quarterly reviews, for instance, I think it's so important, isn't it, when you sort of look at board meetings to not essentially isolate senior leadership from the rest of the workforce, because part of helping sort of promote a good well-being is to make sure that it's clear that their contribution is valued, isn't it? So making sure that they feel that they have a voice and their presence is acknowledged within the business, that's also going to be really, really important, isn't it?
Hugely important. hugely important. And it also, it's trying to kind of like, I think, shift again that sort of traditional narrative of like hierarchy, because that really does foster, you know, this kind of attitude of like, I can't speak up and I can't really talk about, you know, maybe my challenges because I'm not really seeing anybody above me saying it. And, you know, when we, yes, we might have to have hierarchy structures, but if we start to just humanize ourselves, even if we are the CEO and we talk about our struggles, it shows that, you know, everybody can talk. We're all the same, you know, from the cleaner to the CEO, we're all human beings, aren't we?
Exactly right. And the more that we acknowledge that as leaders, the better, of course, things will become and the more action that we can take. Absolutely. It's the recognition, isn't it, and the acceptance that's incredibly important to begin with. And just to sort of finish off with, well, not quite to finish off with, there's more to cover, I think. But one thing that I want to talk about just before we do wrap up is to talk about some of the traps on well-being that, you know, sort of younger business leaders can tend to fall into, Teresa, because we talked about all the things that you should be doing. I think when it comes to sort of some of those toxic cultures that we do see, that where, you know, well-being is essentially on the down, it's not necessarily always things that leaders consciously do badly, is it, that cause problems? I think sometimes we're guilty of falling into traps unconsciously, and it's the things that we don't do rather than the things that we are doing that can essentially make sure that well-being is in the doldrums, which is exactly where it shouldn't be.
Yeah, I think this is a really, really interesting point. And I kind of sort of call it like the shadow side of leadership is, you know, what we all have a responsibility to do is to become, especially as leaders, is to become as self-aware as possible and to really build our emotional intelligence. So to learn, you know, to really kind of be in tune with our own emotions, but understand how our emotions affect our team and how, you know, that has like this sort of positive or negative effect. So the more kind of in tune with our emotions we can be, you know, because we all get triggered. We're only humans, you know, and if we're under more stress, we're more likely to get triggered. So in terms of leadership, you know, you can be really derailed, you know, when you're, say you have a propensity when you get stressed to become quite controlling and micromanaging, you've got to think about how that's impacting your team. And a lot of people don't like to kind of look at those kind of aspects of themselves. But I think as a leader, you know, the more you can do that and be more conscious about how you're showing up and, you know, being able to check in with yourself, you know, the better leader you're going to be, you know, in a huge impact your people in a positive way. And, you know, recognizing that actually we all get derailed, like that's a normal part of being human. We all have, you know, good sides, we all have bad sides. It depends, you know, how we are on that day when we get out of bed. But the more we can, you know, take responsibility and ownership of that, I think that's a really, really crucial thing, that if we all were a little bit more kind of humble, that and we showed that, you know, we acknowledge when we do maybe behave in a little bit of kind of an out way, we own up to it and we say sorry, and, you know, we take responsibility. I think, you know, that's the way forward. And a lot of leaders, you know, they, especially younger leaders, they end up in those positions because they've been really good at their job, but they're not necessarily good people, you know, because they haven't necessarily had that training. So again, it's about, you know, if we're putting people in leadership roles as an organization, you know, what training are we giving them? Have they got the right mindset and skills that they need to lead well and impact their people positively? You know, because these are the key factors in cultivating healthy and inclusive working environments.
They absolutely are. And it's food for thought for anybody that may be tuning into this podcast that is a business leader or up and coming entrepreneur. And just to remind you, everybody, that if what we have discussed today does particularly resonate with you and you do have a question or a comment that you'd like to leave with us, then you can do that via leaderscouncil.co.uk/contact-us. And of course, if you want to submit a question directly to our guest here, Teresa, then we can certainly pass that directly on to her. And for anybody as well, well that may be wishing to join us directly on the programme and bring your perspective to the discussion table in person, then do feel free to apply to be on our show. That's via leaderscouncil.co.uk/apply. And it could be you next sitting down with me to talk all things leadership, well-being and other current affairs as well. For now, Teresa, it's been an immense pleasure welcoming you onto the show. And it's terrible that we're sort of running short of time, because I could literally sit and speak about this topic all day. It's so, so important, and it's something that's come up on the show so much because it is so, so, so very topical, certainly since COVID. But before I do wrap up and let you go, I do want to talk about the immediate future, because it is a little bit of a difficult time, isn't it, for businesses, business leaders and employees, as we're in a cost of living crisis and we're in essentially a difficult economic climate as well. So for you, how is it that you're going to be sort of helping businesses and others really navigate this difficult period that we're going through? Do you have any sort of goals, milestones or ambitions of your own for this next 12 months? And what are you hoping to see in terms of progress on the wellbeing front?
Well, that's a great question. Well, what I'd like to see firstly, and this is really, really difficult, because I think the first thing that tends to get cut in terms of budgets around wellbeing, but what I'd really like to kind of advise leaders is to really prioritise, you know, wellbeing budgets, because if you're cutting that and you're not looking after your people, that is really going to impact, you know, the success of your business, I think, long term. You know, your brand reputation, it will be, you know, really affected by that. I think for the wellness revolution, really helping organizations look at different avenues for wellbeing. Creativity is a huge thing, and when we're actually being more creative, you know, maybe not in the traditional sense of painting and drawing, we're actually using a different part of our brain, which makes us more resilient to stress. So how can we factor in more times to be creative with our team? You know, what tech can we use to encourage more creativity? We have like a winning from home program, which is kind of all based on things that can really help people, you know, work better in terms of, you know, looking at things like perfectionism is a huge thing that really affects so many people, particularly, I would say, in the last year with the response to, as a trauma response to COVID. It's like a way of kind of like managing stress about, being perfect. And I think leaders have a big thing with that too. So, you know, teaching and educating people around these things, you know, how they can work better, you know, not just performing better, feeling better. And we're really looking at, you know, experience design, like helping organizations to design winning programs that are going to like leave a legacy long after we've gone, you know. That's really what our mission is.
Absolutely fantastic mission as well, it is. And like I say, I'd really love to see some positive traction on that front over the course of the year, the next 12 months. And I do hope, as you say there as well, Teresa, we do see more and more businesses essentially stepping up to the mantle on wellbeing, not looking to cut sort of wellbeing budgets during this time, and they recognise the real benefit it will have in sort of keeping their workforces satisfied and boosting productivity as well at a time where we truly do need that. And for anybody as well that is listening into this that wants to find out a little bit more about Teresa and her business, the wellnessrevolution.co.uk, I believe, is a good port of call for that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, fantastic. I'd urge you, of course, all to go and check that out. I mean, it's absolutely fantastic, and there's plenty of resources there to help sort of really redefine your company culture, to really put well-being really at the forefront of all that you do there. And Teresa, thanks ever so much again for your time and taking to join us on the show today. It's been my immense pleasure welcoming you onto the programme. We couldn't, of course, wish to share the knowledge that we do without the likes of yourselves coming and sharing your perspectives with us. So truly appreciative of that. And, you know, I'd love the opportunity as well to maybe even catch up and have you back on the show in future and just talk about sort of how those goals are going for you, and let's just talk about exactly what kind of trajectory we go on the wellbeing front. And as I say, hopefully it's a very positive one.
Yeah, well, I'd love to come back on, Scott. Yeah, anytime.
it would be my pleasure to welcome you back on as well, Teresa, at any point as well. And do, of course, take care as we look to get through this quite tricky period. And to everybody else listening into the show today, I've been your host, as always, Scott Challoner, on today's episode of the Leaders Council podcast, talking all things leadership and well-being. Remember, leaderscouncil.co.uk/contact-us is the place to come if you have anything to say on this episode, or even any points to share about how you've been feeling recently. And you may have one of those topics that we talked about today that particularly resonates with you and you do want to share one of your concerns with us. Until next time, please do take care all as we get through this quite tricky spell, and goodbye. We're all with you.